get a copy of it somewhere off the internet. It's called Dreams of Children by Shadowfax. And in honor of Chuck Greenberg, who died, I'm going to get as many people as I know to play this on different instruments and to write music to this song. It will be a WBAI effort, so get to work on it, my friends. Dreams of Children, and if you forget, just to get in touch with me and I'll tell you what it is and how you can get it. So, you know, it's not, I don't want you to think I stole the song. There is something about stealing things. You know, there's a thing called sampling in music. You know what sampling is? Sampling is they take a piece of something that's popular and they throw it into another piece of music. So you could take the last scene of Casablanca, for example, where Claude Rains says, "I guess we'll round up the usual suspects." And they could take that and they could throw it in the middle of an album, a rock song or something, hip-hop or any of that stuff. Well, I've been sampled a number of times. People have taken my voice and this radio program and put it on a number of different albums that I have here. And it's people ask me how I feel about it. And I say, well, it's great. So they do some little piece that I've said, like it could all be understood, and they'll put that in somebody else's album, and I get no credit for it or anything like that, but I don't care. Over my lifetime, I've written a number of things that people have taken and made their own. Theories that people have put together, even my website, The Positive Mind Piece, somebody actually stole my name, took my name, called himself Armand DeMille out in California, and he actually took my name and was going around saying he was me. How does that feel? Well, unless there's something I lose by it, it's okay. It's okay. I'm not holding on to dear life. I don't need my writings and my theories. I don't sell them as exclusively mine. You know, let people spread it however they spread it. But that's an attitude. You know, it's an attitude I have about things. But there is another attitude that I run into with a lot of people where they are either holding on very tight and they're terrified, or they themselves are larcenous. That's the theme of today. Today I want to talk about stealing. I want to talk about stealing and larceny. If you happen to have a New York Times around today, you'll see an article in the lifestyle section called "I Lost My Laptop to Outer Space." And it's a story about office theft. And in this article, I've been quoted a few times, because there are attitudes I had about it. So it brings up the idea, what is theft? What is pilfering? What is larceny? What is stealing? What is it? And why? Why do we do it? Is it unnatural? Well, let's think about it for a moment. There are animals in the planet. If we talk about, let's say, stealing is a form of deception. If I deceive you, if I make believe I'm doing one thing, but I'm really taking your money, do we call that stealing? In a way, yes. Somebody sells you a used car, but the used car is really a lemon, but they know it's a lemon and they tell you it's a good car. Are they stealing from you? Sure. In a way, they're taking your money. In fact, larceny is described as, here's larceny, it is the person taking of the tangible property of another with the intent to deprive him or her of it permanently. In that case, it would be your money. Taking your money. Larceny. Now, think about nature. Think about what we have out there. A good half of nature uses deception as its way of mating and collecting food. If you look in the ocean, I mean, animals, there are fish in the water that are so dependent on changing their colors and looking like sand and looking like they're hiding somewhere and they're being invisible and they're making believe they're something when they're nothing, and this is how they live. In the ocean, you live by being deceptive. You know, with the exception of the big guys. You know, the shark is not trying to fool anybody. He is who he is. You know? But most of the fish in the ocean, so if you're a Pisces, or if you're a fish sign, if you're a water sign, you know, you maybe have a tendency to be more deceptive than other people. It's a cute generalization, but let's think deception. So therefore, deception is not unnatural. Deception. Now, we're talking about stealing and larceny, which is an exception, an extension of this idea of deception. But deception, makeup is deception. You put on makeup, that's deception. I don't want you to see the wrinkles on my face. You comb your hair to cover your bald spot, deception. It never works, but deception. Right? You do things. You get an implant in your teeth, or breast implants, or butt implants, deception. I want you to think I have something I don't have. Right? Push-up bras, deception. Right? Socks in your pants, men. Deception. Deception. And it's like, you know, and you try to look good, smell good, or you say things and represent yourself as one thing when you're another. So if a man wants to have sex that night, he goes to a bar and he says to somebody, I am a movie producer. And that gets the person interested in him, and somehow that's the way. Deception. Is that unnatural? Well, no. It's all over nature. Nature is in the peacock to every other animal out there. Deception is the way to mate. 90% of mating takes place through deception. So let's not say it's unnatural, and let's say that we hope that humans evolve beyond deception. So, you know, you got to give up your makeup. Maybe we won't evolve that far. All right, so if deception is a natural part, then is stealing a natural part? Well, certainly it is. When you think of the fact that there are some big catches out there, like a lion who goes out there and he grabs himself an antelope. Sorryful sight, you know, but he grabs an antelope, and then a hyena comes along when the lion's not looking. And maybe one hyena will distract him from one part, and the other hyena will go grab his food, grab his carcass and run off with it. Steal the carcass. That's how scavengers live. Well, no, scavengers live off the leftover. But we have this incredible thing in our nature. There are beetles, there are flies, bullflies and beetles, and there are animals and buzzards and everything that lives on the carrion, the dead material. And they throw it back into nature that way, you see. That's how they live. So stealing, scavengering, which is taking the dead leftover, or stealing, which is taking that which belongs to another, is also part of nature. So if stealing is part of nature and deception is part of nature, how do we fault people for stealing? And how do we fault people from being aggressive and killing each other? Well, we just had to make some rules. We had to make some rules. We said, look, in order for us to get along together and not just be a bunch of lions and hyenas, and by the way, don't talk bad about hyenas. They're just regular animals. In fact, did you know the hyena is more closely related to the mongoose than it is to the dog, and more closely related to the meerkat than it is to the dog? It just looks like a dog. But it's quite a powerful animal, quite a great hunter. Just has a funny sound. When people laugh like that, ooh, you know, but they're all decent beings. And so are you. And I know you steal. I know 90% of you out there steal in one form or another, maybe 95%, and the 5% who don't, of the 5% who don't, or the 10% who don't, I mean, you steal. You cheat on your income taxes, right? How's that right there? You put down one claim, one thing you shouldn't claim. 95% of you, and the 5% of you who don't, are probably, 4 of those 5% are probably crazy afraid, so terrified of doing something that their pathology is not to steal. So maybe 1% of honest people in the world, really, really honest people who say, I ain't going to do it. I'm not going to do anything fraudulent. I'm not going to cheat the government. I'm not going to cheat the taxes. I'm not going to cheat anything. And I'm not saying you should be, because it would make you an odd animal, you know? You'd be an odd being. I don't think elephants steal in any form. I think they're part of that 1% who kind of go along and say, you want my peanuts? It's like I don't think they care. I think they're just, you know, the big ones, the whales. I don't think they care so much. You steal money. What are you going to steal money? My microbes? What are you going to take? My plankton? Hey, I'm missing some plankton. Who moved my plankton? So, the point of this whole thing is to go into your stealing, and I'm going to tell you a couple of fascinating things that you don't know, just in case any of you lawyers are listening. Do you know that stealing very often is connected to bulimia? Bulimia, the thing where people eat and they vomit and they throw up, do you know stealing is connected to that? We'll get to that. Do you know that stealing is a way of expressing anger in one way and another way expressing dependency? Right? Give you an example of it. One of the reasons that hotels will print their names on soap dishes and ashtrays is because they want you to take it. Because otherwise, why would they put their name on an ashtray or on a soap dish? They don't need to know where they belong. They're in the hotel. But they put their name on it so that you will pick it up and take it and feel obligated in some way to them, attached, and at the same time show it to other people. You feel connected. So one of the reasons that people permit and encourage stealing is so that you stay connected. It's like the hippo with the little bird that eats out of its ear. You know, it kind of wants to encourage that bird to keep coming around because it's eating the bugs off it. You know, it's not stealing. You're not stealing from me. You're taking from me, but I want you to. So maybe you have to ask yourself, if people deceive you, do you want to be deceived? Maybe you have to ask yourself, if people steal from you, do you want them to steal from you? We're going to have to look at that. Because here on The Positive Mind, that's what we do. We don't point the finger. We don't say they are bad. We say, what are we doing to make this happen? Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I hope you're listening. How many of you have stolen something big in your life? We're going to get a chance to get your confession, right? So that maybe you can, you know, get absolution today for whatever it was. I'll tell you the story about a young man named Tony. And I'm going to call him Tony Figueroa because it's close to the name that was there and it's an okay name to use. Tony, when he was a young boy, he used to live down in Staten Island near where they had the arcades. I think it was South Beach. And he was down there in the 40s, this was, in the 50s, early 50s. And he remembers stealing a box that was at one of those little stands where people throw balls at dolls and try to knock them over, you know, those knock-them-down things. And so he reached over and he grabbed a cigar box, and in that cigar box there was money, and he ran off with it. And he remembered running off, and he remembered somebody yelled, that boy took it as he was running away. And so he ran to the beach, and he buried this box in the beach. And he buried it so quick, and he ran away, and the police caught up with him. And they caught up, and they grilled him, and they said, where's the box? He said, I didn't take anything. And they had witnesses said, yes, he took it. And he said, no, I didn't take it. Well, they hunted all over, and he watched in terror as they dug in the sand. Because somebody said, I saw him bury it in the sand. And they looked in the sand, but they couldn't find it. That was in the summer. He goes back to New York. And he goes to high school, and he tells his friend about the caper. And he tells his friend that he wants to go back and get the money. Oh, the thing I forgot to say is the shopkeeper said there was $300 in that cigar box. $300 I'm missing. And was screaming and yelling, and everybody was yelling at him to confess, which he didn't. So he went back. So he goes back to high school where he's like 14, 15 years old, and he gets his friend, and he tells his friend about this money that's buried in the sand. And 6 months later, they go to the beach, and they get to the boardwalk, which they hide under the boardwalk, and they're crawling on their elbows like commandos, until he runs, and he runs to where the box was because he buried it right near a stick and a rock, he remembered. And he gets the box, and he comes running back, and the two of them grab it from this place where they are, and now carrying the box, they don't want to be seen on a bus, so they run all the way to the ferry, which is a good 2-3 miles. And they run like crazy to the ferry with this box with this money in it. And they get on the ferry, and they don't want to open it on the ferry because they don't want anybody to see it. They get into Manhattan. And they get all the way finally to a safe place, and they walk into an alley to open it up, and they open it up, and it was $2. and his entire life flashed. He said he couldn't believe it. He went through so much stuff, the shame, the horror, the guilt, the pride. There was so much stuff around this $2 thing. Obviously, the man said it was $300 so he could get some pity or insurance or something. $2. Well, back then, of course, it was a lot of money. But still, $2. So Tony's story, I see repeated over and over again by people who take things, steal things, and do things like that. And I'd like to talk to you about your own. Let's talk a little bit about how far it goes. There's a larceny by trick or deception. There's a larceny by false promise. And there's a larceny by false pretense. Think about that. You take something by deceiving someone. I had a friend who recently went to Spain. And there she is in Spain, and two people decide they're going to take her wallet, and one person gets her attention away from her wallet at the moment, and the other person takes her wallet. The trick, the game, they must have done it 100 times, whisked it away, took her wallet and her credit cards and all the stuff with it. Then there's another one by false promise, where someone says to you, someone obtains property in exchange for a promise to do something and they don't do it. You get a contractor. The contractor says he's going to do a job in your house. You give him the money to do the job. He never shows up. Larceny, right? Punishable larceny. Larceny. Larceny by false pretense. That's another one where you obtain something from somebody by misrepresenting facts relating to the promise. Here, for example, would be where somebody says, I'll sell you my car. And I get your money, and then I actually don't own the car. He puts it on eBay up for sale, and you wind up sending him the money, and then he doesn't have a car in the first place. That's by false pretense. The false pretense is making believe you have something you don't have. Now, these sound like big things. Why are we talking about stealing? Well, think about stealing someone's heart. Think about that. Think about romance. Think about larceny or romance or deception in romance by trick or deception, right? Here's a deception. I make believe I am who I am, and I'm not that kind of person. I tell you I'm married when I'm not. I tell you I'm not married when I'm married, right? And this, therefore, you wind up having a relationship with me. Trick or deception. Oh, I'm really available, but I travel all over the world, and I'm not. I can never be here on weekends because I have a job in Saudi Arabia. You know? Or other larcenies that we do. Tricks by false pretenses, by false promise. I promise you, yes, I will love you in the morning. Right? By false pretense, yes, if you love me, I will tomorrow, I'll deliver you something I don't have. All of this in the sake of lust, mostly for sex or money. Right? Like somebody could do it to somebody to get their money. A woman could say, somebody could say to somebody, I'll have sex with you. I may have sex with you tomorrow, but I got to get money for my rent tonight. Right? So you send the rent for tonight and you don't have sex with the person tomorrow because it was all false. A lot of deception and falseness takes place on online dating. They've got online dating down to where people have developed characters that eventually they milk with you and they work with you and they work with you and eventually they send you a story and eventually you feel sorry for them and eventually they can't pay their rent and I can't pay for the ticket to come to see you because I'm in Nova Scotia and you have to send me the money to pay for the ticket to come to see you and when you send them the money, that's it, the link ends. So all of this is taking place. But again, my friends, we live in a world, we say to ourselves, what a horrible world we live in. How could people do this to such unsuspecting people? Well, what do you think happens to the fish in the water? A fish is going by and he thinks he sees a worm, right? And he says, ooh, a worm. I'm just an innocent fish. I think I'll go eat that worm that's floating by and there's a hook on the end of it and you're the fisherman catching him. That's all fishing is deception. You know what I mean? It's all fraudulent stuff. All of that is hunting. How about making believe you're in the wild and you're making believe you wear camouflage so that they can't see you, so that when you go hunting, you know, it's all deception. Animals do it with each other. When the lion lurks in the tall grasses and you can't tell the difference between the tiger and the grass because the tiger has got stripes and the grass is striped, deception. So here you are, my friends. How do we want to live? Do we want to live in a world where we get angry at people for being deceptive? Or do we want to live in a world where we encourage people to be truthful with us and encourage the truth? It's a different thing. That's a whole different thing. A man goes for a job as a bartender. And he goes to a job as a bartender, and this is a true story, I'm told. And the man who owns the bar says to him, "Do you steal?" And the first man says, "Never." And the second man goes for the job and he says, "Do you steal?" And the second man says, "Never." And he goes to the third man and goes and he says, "Do you steal?" He says, "Yes. Whenever the till is full, I take a little extra for myself." And he got the job. Because the boss knows that they steal. And he wanted somebody who would just say, "Yeah, this is what I do." And knew that there would be limits. Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. So we're learning a lot about this now. We're learning that it's a natural thing for people to deceive, natural for people to steal. Here's my test for you. You go to a store that you like. Let's say you go to a Nordstrom or some place you like. Big place, right? Whatever it is. And you walk out and you know the shopping people and they give you, you bought two blouses and three skirts and you walk out. And just as you get to your car, you decide to look at your receipt, which you didn't look at because you were too fast, and you notice you didn't get charged for the three skirts. Let's start off with one skirt you didn't get charged for, and the skirt was worth $90. What do? You're at your car. Your kids are waiting. Do you go back in and find the person and say, "Oh, you didn't charge me this $90. Do you decide you'll save it till the next time? Or do you say, "Well, you know, a little gift from the universe"? Not considering that somewhere in the inventory somebody is going to account for that. Not considering that. And not considering that the store, because it believes that there's a certain percentage of larceny that takes place, has to increase its cost by just a tiny, tiny percentage that everybody pays for that skirt that you took. No consideration of that. And maybe you shouldn't. Why should you? Right? Okay, now you look down at your receipt, and it's not one skirt, but it's three skirts. It's $300 worth of stuff. Now it's big stuff. And now you know somebody may get in trouble, and your kids are waiting. What do you do? And then, when you think you're going to call up from a distance, somebody says to you, "Boy, if you report that to the wrong person, they're going to fire the clerk who made that mistake." Now what do you do? Well, if you report it to the clerk has no way of undoing it. Report it to somebody else, they'll fire the clerk. There you are with $300 worth of stolen goods. What do you do? I know what my friend did who was in that situation. She donated the three skirts. Yeah, she gave it to a place that needed skirts, right? A place that used them. She just said, there's got to be some way of passing this along. Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. So, you know, do you steal? Do you take things? Do you deceive? Do you hide? It's natural. Don't judge it. Don't beat it up. If people lie to you, don't beat them up because they lie to you. Just say to yourself, "I must be the kind of person that people don't want to be honest with. There must be something I do that makes people not want to tell me the truth." Because that's why people lie. People lie. Some people lie just because they have to lie. It's called pathological lying. Some people steal because they can't help it. Kleptomania, which is when you steal kleptos. No, kleptomania, which is when you can't stop yourself from stealing, has been associated with chemical imbalances in the brain, which are related to obsessive compulsive disorder, and they have found ways of treating kleptomania medically. they see it almost as a part of a manic depression. And if you think about it, you think about manic depression and you think about mania, the feeling of mania is being outside yourself in this kind of shopaholic kind of way. That kind of really fits. And a kleptomaniac who goes into a store, who doesn't need what they steal, but they steal something and they grab it and they run off and they just can't stop themselves. It is like a manic episode. So it's associated with that in some way, and they find medication has kind of stopped that from happening. Kleptomania, you know, there's a way of stopping it. But of course you could analyze it too, and you could find out that what a person is really stealing whenever they steal is they're trying to steal some form of love because they never had it in the first place. Are you stealing love when you steal something? Are you trying to get affection? That's what we're going to talk about when we come back. And we're going to have to also talk about, as I said, this relationship between impulse behaviors, eating disorders, and stealing. There's a mixture between the two. So this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We've opened up the door. Telephone number here for after the call is 212-209-2900, 212-209-2900. We are going to be taking your calls after the break. We're going to be playing a break. We're going to be having a break in a few minutes. And then after the break, we're going to play a little music, and then we'll come back. But between now and then, I want to announce to you once again that we are having this wonderful, wonderful event, which is for people to submit, and the musicians out there and the musical writers and the singers out there, all of you, I want you to submit to me on a CD a recording of the song The Dreams of Children by Shadowfax in honor of Chuck Greenberg, who wrote it. And I want to play it on the air, and we'll play different versions of it. You can play it on any instrument, play it on a lute, play it on a banjo, play it any way you can. Or just hum it, sing it, or write words to it. Da-da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da-da. You know what I mean? You've heard it often enough. Put it down. Write it down as a project. It's The Dreams of Children by Shadowfax. It was one of these things when I started playing it originally. I loved the tune, 15 years ago. And I called the artist. And he was so happy to give it to us. So happy to say, please, please, go ahead and use it, please. It's happy to use it. One time they used it on Channel 13. He said for a little while, I'm happy that you use it for your program. It's a wonderful program. And then right after that, he died. And so in memory of Chuck Greenberg, I'd like all of us to honor that by, you know, getting to work and taking this wonderful gift that he gave us. And you doing something with it, if possible. When we come back, hey, can you steal love? There's a question for you. Have you stolen love? Do you wish you could steal somebody's love? You know, is it possible that somehow you would actually get a great feeling from stealing? Do you feel like you really win? Or does every time you steal something, do you feel, if you steal something with an empty promise, if you get love with an empty promise, how do you feel? There's a group of people called the psychopath. The psychopath will steal everything and anything with no feeling whatsoever, because the psychopath has one characteristic. He has no guilt. When you have no shame and no guilt, you may have remorse. Like if you get caught, you have remorse. But guilt, no. Remorse is the express, I'm sorry I got caught. That's remorse. Yeah, I'm sorry I stole because I got caught. That's remorse. But guilt is, I'm sorry I stole because I shouldn't have done it in the first place and I was wrong to do it. Well, the very same person who could do that is usually the very same person who could steal your heart. They are the most seductive people in the world because they have learned how to steal your heart, how to work on your emotions. And it is the very person who winds up doing the most damage to people, the psychopath. And it's all about stealing because they are like the hyenas. They just don't believe they can make it on their own. So they got to take it some other way. I'll be back with you in a couple of minutes. This is Armand DeMille.
Oh, you eager, but not a fool, me, oh, not the means of 怎么也不懂，怎么也不管，就知道每天都要打麻将。我有一个很大的朋友，他的名字叫做怎么也不懂，怎么也不管，就知道每天都要打麻将。他们说打麻将可以修身养性，他们说打麻将可以陶冶心情，他们说打麻将可以贴补家用，他们说打麻将可以改善家境。
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to a blues from Taiwan. It's a blues from Taiwan. And it's a blues about playing mahjong, believe it or not. Long-gi, L-O-N-G-G-E, singing about his feelings about mahjong in a blues. Why not? From anywhere where they come from. Hey, listen, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about stealing, we're talking about larceny, theft, tendency in all of us to be deceptive and to encourage deception because, look, you know, who's going to look at the one who's got the flat chest if we're attracted to the implants? So what do we say? We say be deceptive. What do we do if we're not going to be attracted to someone who is not wearing makeup, you know, or if a man's not dressed up a certain way? We are saying you must be deceptive in order to get me, to get what you want. So we're a part of it, you know, and it's all part of the system. And it's not so bad. You know, there are carnivores and detrivores and necrophagists. You know what a necrophage is? Necrophage, yeah. A person who eats dead person. Well, it's an animal that eats dead things, you know, like carrion. And this is all of nature. Nature kind of designed it this way. Now, stealing tendencies in the eating disorder. A study assessing the importance of stealing in the eating disorder found a positive correlation between bulimia, bulimic tendencies, that's eating and vomiting, and the history of stealing. It was discovered that of all the people, that like 90% of the people who were bulimic admitted to stealing. Stealing is more likely when the eating disorder, not just an eating disorder, but when it is bulimia. So let's think about that. How do the two of those go together? What is bulimia? Bulimia is I eat, but I can't stand eating, so I reject it. I throw it away. I cannot possess it. I can't own it. I can't hold it. it can't be mine. It is never mine. The food is never mine. There's a sense of a bulimic of always feeling like you're kind of a shell that food passes through. So that and this kind of false self goes along with this compulsion to kind of take things that aren't yours, because then nothing is ever yours. You know the nice thing about having something, the nice thing about putting down your roots, is you feel like you belong somewhere. Bulimics always feel like they don't belong. Thieves always feel like they don't belong. And I understand. Because how could you belong if all you're doing is, you know, how about this? You have a party. You have a party for a group of people. You don't know them all. What do you do with your medications that are in your medicine chest? What if you've got some medications in your medicine chest? You know that at every party there's going to be somebody, if they're allowed into your bathroom, that's going to open your medicine chest. Do you know that? And they're going to look at, if you have Valium in there, you're going to be losing a few. If you have any pills in there that are prescription drugs, they're more likely to take them. At any party. Now you're saying you wouldn't hang out with those kind of people, or those that would never happen in Connecticut. No, it would happen. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take a couple of your calls, and let's find out how you feel about your own stealing. And of course, you're going to be judgmental. And of course, I'm going to say to you, listen, if we represent anything here, we represent compassion and learning. So let's see what we could do to understand without beating up. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take one of your calls. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Armand.
Hello.
I'm very interested in the topic today about stealing.
Yes.
Well, I had this happen to me a long time ago. Matter of fact, it's been 30 years. My brother, before he passed away, he left a will in a safe. And the only person that had the combination to the safe was my sister. And my other brother, who he was living with at the time, tricked my sister into opening up the safe by saying that there were papers in there he needed to bury her brother. Well, as soon as the safe door was open, my brother told my sister, you know, everything in here belongs to me. And that was it. What he had done was he'd taken the will out and destroyed it. And now 30 years have gone by, and of course this kept me away from my brother's house and my nieces, who are, one of which I was very close to. And recently I contacted her, asking her if I could have, you know, the things that were left to me, because her father had passed away. You know, I didn't do it the day he died. I waited a few weeks.
Her father, your brother, had passed away.
Yeah.
This is your brother. You said her father, your brother, died?
Yeah, well, they both died. The one who died had left me. He raised me.
Right.
Because my mother was killed when I was 7 years old. She was hit by a bus.
Your mother was killed. Your older brother raised you?
Yeah, my brother David.
And where was your father?
My father, he was an invalid. I was 10 when this happened. He had a stroke.
Oh, and, my gosh almighty.
He was in a nursing home. And my brother David, who, you know, was the guy who was taking care of me, he went to the nursing home and got my father out because he just couldn't stand the thoughts of him, you know, being there.
So David took care of you. And what's your name, by the way?
Cy.
Cy. David took care of you. And then David, how did David die? What happened to him?
He had, he was an exterminator. And he wound up having kidney problems. And he was on dialysis for a long time.
Died. How old was he?
He was 44.
Wow, that's pretty young. And then your other brother, he also dies. Your other brother, Michael, the one who stole from the safe. He also died. How did he die?
He had, I think, a heart attack or something, but
How old is he?
He died like a year ago. I think he was 69, 70.
He was older?
Yeah.
Than your other brother who took care of you?
Yes. Well, Michael, there was Bernard who died about 10 years before Michael died. Bernard was the oldest, then there was Michael, and then there was my sister Nadine and David. And it's just me. I'm the only one left now because my sister died at 44, too, from cancer.
Mm-hmm.
She was the one who was entrusted with the combination to the safe.
Oh, my gosh.
Everything was in there.
Cy, let me ask you something. How did you ever get through this? That's an amazing amount of losses. Amazing.
Well, it doesn't end there. I lived with this woman for, well, it'll be 30 years today, but 3 years ago, she had a lot of health problems, and we just got to the point where we fought a lot, and her mother bought a trailer for her, and she lives in a trailer, which is actually only about 5 blocks down the road. I still see her, and our daughter.
All right. So, Cy, to get to this, what you're talking about is, so you were deeply wounded. Now, look. As far as I'm concerned, you're an orphan. You're an orphan or a refugee, at least. And there you are, trying to get through life as best you can, you and your brothers. And, of course, they become scavengers. And your brother did something that people do when there is a death of somebody very important. People get crazy around wills and possessions, and they get nuts. I watched it in my old family. One of my aunts died, and I watched the scavengers kind of go descend on our house because she was supposedly had money hidden everywhere, and she didn't. But they went in there, and all the scavengers got in there right away to try to get money. Now, when I say scavengers, I don't mean that as a judgment. I mean, oh, you poor people, to have to rush to the house of a dead person to try to get what you can with no consideration for the effect it has on other people. That's pretty sad. Yeah. It's pretty sad that your brother was carrying that around with him, that that's what he did, that he deceived you, and he took your possessions. It's pretty sad. It's pretty sad that their mental status of everybody around you was kind of weak. So now we get to the point where you're trying to still get back some of what you think you deserved. You want to get the ring that your brother left you, or whatever it was that your brother left you, from your niece, who is caught in...
They won't give it to me.
It's caught in the middle of it. Of course she won't give it to you.
Well, they told me to forget about it.
I understand.
Carrying this around with me.
What would you rather have? Would you rather have your niece or the items?
Well, it's gotten to the point, Armand, where, you know, I wanted my niece. When I thought about her, I cried, but I could never go back there, you know what I mean? Because I tried to, my niece wasn't there at the time, she had moved out, but my brother just acted like, you know, it was...
You don't come from a family that really rings true, you know, as being a stellar group of insightful people who know what they're doing. You really sound like you come from a family of very dysfunctional people. The most important thing is when you have a dysfunctional group and you try to get something, when you're trying to squeeze sugar out of a rock, water out of a rock, water out of a rock, when you're trying to find a little bit of something out of it, it gets very difficult, and I guess she's right. You know, in a way, you have to pass on, but really what's most important to you is that you have family.
Well,
and if you could let this whole thing go and have the family and still have the family and really let it go and not let it be an obsession, it would be a very valuable thing for you. Otherwise, you don't belong to anything, and you need other than WBAI, of course.
But listen to me, Armand. I'll always know that these people had to realize what they were doing to me when they did this.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it wasn't my niece who actually stole the things herself, when my brother passed away, she wound up with them, and she has them. And she knows that they belong to me. Now, how can I get them back as a family when they have this, you know, these things that belong to me? And
all right, I'm going to tell you. I'm going to give you the answer to that, because it happens a great deal in families, especially around the death. You understand the desperation of the person who had to do this and how desperate they must have been to be inconsiderate of the feelings of someone else. And you really do. You've had enough years of being angry. You look at them kind of pathetically.
So much trouble, man.
Yeah, I know. And you just look at them pathetically and you say, eventually you settle your own heart. And you say, oh, these poor people, look at what they've had to do, and you let it go. And you see it as the sin they committed against themselves. You know what I mean? And that it's not against you. It's a sin they did to themselves. You're a beautiful man. Anybody should welcome you and your family. I wish I had a big enough family to welcome you in.
So you're saying that I should just forget about it, what they took.
It's not forget about it. It's forgive them because...
Well, I'm willing to forgive.
Yeah, because... And not if they don't have to give it back, because now everybody's hung up on this thing, because it's crazy to be hung up on possessions.
Well...
I want the lamp that my uncle gave me. That, you know, this is not what counts. What counts is when your niece holds you and puts her arms around you and says, "Oh, uncle, I love you." That counts. That counts. And if you got to get rid of the memory to do it...
She told me that she was willing to... she doesn't know me anymore, and that she was willing to, like, let me back into the family. I don't know who made her the head of the family, but, you know. But she also told my girlfriend that I was crazy, and all the males in our family are...
Listen, like I said, you don't come from a very solid group, Cy.
Yeah,
so whatever they do, you kind of look at them as if it's just a sad thing they do. She might say that.
But look at it this way. Suppose I took your wallet, okay?
Yep.
And you know I got it in my pocket. And I say to you, "Look, Armand, I'm sorry I took your wallet." And you say, "Okay, Cy, I forgive you." But I still keep your wallet in my pocket. I'm having a hard time getting around that.
I might let you have my wallet.
Well, suppose what was in your wallet was...
I know what you're saying, Cy. We actually had that happen over here. You know, we actually had somebody come by who wanted help with stealing, and they stole something. And it's like we look at it, and I look at it, and I say, okay, how long am I going to get involved in this grease? How much time am I going to invest? Because you understand that all the time that you invested stole time from you, and it was your investing.
Oh, I went. I hired a lawyer.
I understand. Okay, now listen, Cy, I got to go because I'm going to take another call. But I do appreciate you calling, and it's amazing to me. Your story is amazing because you've come so far yourself.
Yeah, but it's done so much to me. My daughter is in the Army now, and she doesn't even talk to me. I haven't talked to her in 3 years.
Nobody talks to anybody around you. I understand. Maybe you need to give us a call and let us find some way of getting you to settle your heart. You know, Cy? Maybe you need a little help.
Okay. Well, I did subscribe to that offer you had.
So I'm going to get a chance to meet you. What a wonderful thing. I look forward to it. Cy, remind me.
Okay.
Thank you. 212-209-2900. Yes, I look forward to meeting so many people from that last thing we did here at WBAI. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello, Armand.
Hello, yes.
I have what I think is a kind of interesting, almost embarrassing story about stealing. I'm a professional, and I was in a position where my time was basically my own, but I got paid by the amount of work that I did. I got paid by the hour. And unfortunately, sometimes we were busy, sometimes we weren't busy. And there were times when I wasn't working a lot, like maybe 10 hours, 11 hours a week. And what I found myself doing was, and I'd never done this before, was adding time so that it would come out to be more. And I reached a point where I was adding like 4 or 5 hours a week. And then even when it was busy, I continued to do that.
It's a funny thing, isn't it? Because, you know, you consider the same thing takes place with all the legal profession. Right, how much time you get clocked by the hour, right?
Yeah.
I remember I once called my lawyer, and my lawyer was talking to me about the problem he was having with his daughter, and then he sent me a bill for the amount of time I spent on the phone with him.
Oh,
geez. I had to get a new lawyer. But
I felt bad about this.
But this is the whole point. You see, the point is this larceny that we do, it's okay. You're allowed. Yes, in the profession, people steal time. I know somebody who is a writer for an advertising company, and she does it at the beach. And she does it because she takes her computer to the beach, and she does it at the beach. And she may add a few hours, and she'll get paid a little extra. And I'm saying, okay, that's one way to be. And I understand you feel bad about it. And one of the things that we do eventually is we say, I wonder what it would be like to be real.
Yeah.
I wonder
yeah.
what it would be like to be totally
and
real.
And I knew that if the person, I mean, I'm sure the person that I worked with directly wouldn't have cared too much, because as long as the work got done, I don't think he could have cared too much. But I know the person that ran the business, so to speak, or the office, I know that she probably would have fired me over it.
Might have fired you over it, might have, you know, and or may have raised the rates that they charge everybody else because they have to make up for the fact that it costs so much money to get a job done. You know what I mean? I mean, no
yeah.
matter what she does, if, let's say they sold magazines and that you had a job as a writer and you had to charge extra money as a writer to get this job done, well, then they've got to sell and they've got to raise the price of the magazines to get these jobs done. And
yeah.
it's kind of the way it works around the planet, you know? If we
so
still...
What I did, I mean, I feel bad about it, and it wasn't wrong, or...
No, it's not wrong. I mean, what is wrong? What does wrong mean?
Well, I just felt like I was deceiving them, that I was adding extra hours.
You are deceiving yourself. You are deceiving. You have values that are different than this. And because you are given the gift of a higher level of values, when you step below your level of values, you feel bad to yourself.
Okay.
Do you understand? If you have the gift of a higher state of consciousness, let's say you become somebody who's nonviolent, and then suddenly you turn around and you hit your kid, it cost you more than it would the person who doesn't have those values because you've been given the gift. So it's you with you. It's not you with them. It's not you with society, and it's not me judging you. It's you with you. How do you feel about it? And
yeah.
when you get to the point where you say, well, I'm glad I got even with them, then you got to look at it and say, who am I really getting even with?
Yeah, I never felt that way.
That's right.
You know, I just felt that it was more of a thing where, say, an unexpected credit card thing would come up. My pet got sick.
Sure.
And I had, all of a sudden, I had $200 or $300 extra on the credit card. And, you know, I'm in a profession where I could make that amount of money and not a week or, you know, just like a day, and I would just add more money to it. Like
sure.
if I were doing what I needed to be doing, seeing patients, and it took me 3 hours, I would put down 4.5 or 5.
Absolutely.
And then every day, by the end of the week, I had about five hours more. And then I guess what got me was even when I didn't need the money, I continued to do it.
Sure. And that's what happens. It becomes a way of being. And
yeah.
it's just according to what you want for yourself.
It
becomes your value with you. Don't make anybody else the judge on the outside.
Yeah, and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't that pleasant.
How do you think, what do you think these physicians must feel who do in-network kind of doctoring, where they have 20 patients lined up in a row in different rooms, and they run from one room to the other, give each one about 3 minutes when they're supposed to be giving them 15 minutes, and then they bill for all 15 minutes. I mean, every one of those doctors out there who are an in-network physician probably goes home feeling like a thief, probably
yeah.
feels bad about it, but says, that's the way the system is, it's the only way I could get through, and we justify it.
Yeah, in fact, I work in healthcare, and this was
you see it
one
all
of
over
the
things.
Place. While I was doing one thing, this other person who was my boss, who I was working with, a physician, was the one who had all the people lined up and whatnot.
That's why I mentioned it.
Yeah. And, periodically I do per diem work, and I still do that kind of thing. And, yeah, it does kind of make you, except I don't get the money.
Yeah, I hear.
You know, like I'm working later on today, and I'll probably see, in 4 hours, I'll probably see about 20 patients.
Well, the point of it is, it's what you want from yourself.
Yeah.
What do you want from you? What level of excellence do you want? What level do you want to present in the world? Where do you want to be? And as far as I'm concerned, it's nice to shoot for. I think I'd like to be real. Just nice.
Yeah, and that's my whole thing now is, it had nothing to do with what went on. In fact, the person never knew that I was adding hours. But the funny part was that the thing kind of ended because they changed the whole way that they were doing things.
Listen, I have to be going. I thank you for calling in.
Oh, thank you very much. You made me feel better.
Good. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I'll be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m. And we will have Tuesday at 1 p.m. more exciting stuff for you. If you want to get a copy of today's program, you could call 212, my office, 757-4488. Or you could go to thepositivemind.com and go to our website. Or go to WBAI.org and you can listen to the program again.